for Shake, Rattle, and Troll, a show for the serious fisherman, as well as the novice looking for tips from the pros. Shake, Rattle, and Troll is brought to you by Bill Luke Dodge Chrysler Jeep. Now, here's your host, saltwater fisherman and tournament pro, Don McDowell.
Yeah, man. Hey, I'm Don McDowell. Welcome to Shake, Rattle, and Troll this morning. Hope everybody's having a stellar day and there's not a weed eater involved in your day. As always, JK's in the house, Safeguard Business Systems, and I smell bagels.
You are correct.
Yeah, thanks to Safeguard Business Systems. President of the ADA, James Brown, not the James Brown, but the James Brown from Fish Clipper and Robo Westy. And special guest, let me introduce this guy. We try to bring you the best of the best in the fishing world. We're doing that in the hunting world. Eddie Murdoch is probably, in my mind, the premier varmint caller in the Southwest. Thanks for coming down. Welcome, man.
Thank you for inviting me.
Good to have you here. We're going to be talking about the art, and it indeed is an art of predator calling.
Absolutely.
You've got it down, elk calling. We have a new hood ornament for the
for the Prius.
Nice.
It would work better on the one you've driving today.
I'm telling you, who did your...
Greg McBride from Trails End Taxidermy.
He did. Nice, nice European mount. So what was the final score on that elk, John?
He told me 333.
I believe him.
Yeah. He nice. Topped out. He was a little light up on top. Otherwise, he would have been a great bull. He was probably 3.5. In another year or two, he would have just been a toad.
Would have doesn't count.
No.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
And he's done.
I'm happy with him. He's got best thirds I've seen in a long time on a bull out of 3C.
Nice. Very nice. James, what's happening over on the Robo Westy side of life?
You know, the holiday season's here, and we're running specials. Still waiting on a shipment from the Dominican Republic on my hook, so I'm kind of hesitant on...
What?
Yeah, I got 90 days to get those things, so I'm hesitant on...
Okay, I'm stunned. Yeah. Hooks from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, it's a Lucky Strike special-made jig head.
Really?
And it comes... You can't get them in the States because they make them specially for Lucky Strike. Gamagachu does. And I'm real hesitant on
okay,
launching the Robo Westy.
We're going to have a vocabulary lesson today.
Yeah, I think we need it.
Daiichi. Come on, say it.
Right.
Daiichi.
Daiichi.
Okay, now spell it. Never mind.
D-A-I-H-H-I-C-C-I. Yeah, whatever.
But anyways...
Give me a vowel, please.
Wall, I got them.
So that's my Robo Westy story. I'm real hesitant on launching it right now because I want to make sure I have all the product in my hands before I can really... Because I'd hate to advertise and then not have it, not be able to get the product because it is kind of hard to get.
Yeah,
so,
definitely so.
I'm just, you know, in the meantime, I've been going to Bass Pro Shops, buying them, making my own. I'm paying full price for the
Ooh.
Packaging. So I'm just doing kind of a little thing, but I'm getting it out there. People are liking it. Right now is not the best time to throw a Robo Westy. It's kind of top water season right now, crankbait. But we're working forward with the holidays and running specials. 20% off right now on my website. You know, go to fishclipper.com, check it out. A lot of cool stuff going on. And
We'll check.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, Eddie, thanks for coming down again, and thank you for your military service. You mentioned that. What did you do?
Marine Corps.
Hoorah.
Got it. Yeah. That's good stuff. How'd you get started in varmint calling, just out of curiosity?
Well, I used to be normal.
That's why you're here today. All of us used to be normal at one time.
I used to be
normal.
You've
been profiled. You fit in.
I grew up in Ohio and started hunting age 12.
Buckeye boy.
Rabbits and beagles. That's how I started hunting.
Nice.
That's what I started with. And I always had an interest in hunting the hunters, hunting the foxes and the coyotes and this and that. I always had an interest in it, but I didn't really know what to do as far as, I didn't know much about it. You can read this and they read that, so on and so forth, but I didn't really know. And until I joined I came into Arizona, this and that, so on and so forth, over time, and when I became an adult and after the Marine Corps, and joined the Phoenix Varmint Callers. That's the club I'm with, the Phoenix Varmint Callers.
How many members do they have?
We have a little over 200 members.
Wow.
A little over 200, yeah. Yeah, they have a website, www.pvci.org.
He said that before, I think.
Org.
org.
I thought that was a pirate term.
Arg.
Join that club and learned how to. Well, I learned what to do. Put it that way. I learned what to do as far as how to imitate the distress cries of certain prey species type things, and actually attract animals to you. What predator calling? That's what it's varmint calling, predator calling. I call it predator calling. What it's all about to me is what you're doing is you're trying to imitate. You're trying animals. The hunters, the predators out there. They're out there. They're trying to make a living. It's tough. You got to catch things. You got to run things down. You got to kill to survive. Put it that way. You got to kill to survive. When you do. Say a coyote catches a rabbit or a hawk kills a rabbit or something like that. The animal makes a certain cry. Makes a certain distress noise. If you can imitate that
help
noise.
Help me.
More like a baby crying.
More like a baby crying. I do have some calls here.
Good. We're going through that.
Yeah. And the thing about it is instead of you going out and looking for elk or you going out and looking for things, you going out and looking for ducks or looking for animals, when you make these noises, animals will come to you. They'll be attracted to you, and they'll be coming to you. And usually when they're coming to you, they're coming to eat you. So yeah, things can get real exciting.
That's a little bit different than what J.K. did. He's out prowling the woods imitating a cow elk in heat.
Right.
I mean,
right,
just
right,
put
right.
some thought into that.
Oh, I know. And
sex and food keeps the world running.
And I've thought about that. I mean, there are other things I do also. I also elk call. I also turkey call. And that's different, a little bit different. It's exciting also. But usually when those animals are coming in, they're coming in to mate with you.
Hoorah.
That was the intent. Hoorah. Yes.
So one of the questions you got to ask yourself, do you want to get laid or do you want to eat? Or do you want to get laid or do you want to get eaten?
You got to feel some pressure, JK.
Or do you want to get eaten? Predator calling, you might get eaten.
Do you get as much thrill as I do out of hearing a turkey respond to you?
Oh, yeah.
That's just the best.
I do.
That and elk. The elk are exciting, but I don't know what it is about a turkey.
Yeah,
I have no clue.
That's pretty good.
That works.
That was pretty good.
What are you doing next spring?
Okay, Eddie. I'm turkey in the backpack. Let's go.
I'm turkey in. But I get the same thrill out of seeing a. Over the years, some of the things that have happened to me, I've called in a bear. I had the closest bear came on a dead run and stopped 7 steps away.
Oop,
and I had no weapon. I've had coyotes actually run right into me. I've had fox run up and touch me. I've had fox jump over my head. I've had all kinds of things happen.
I've had them bark at me from 3 feet away.
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually been touched by him.
He's been touched.
That's scary.
That's why they has that look about him.
And I forgot about the mountain lion. The lion that I killed was when I looked back, I was calling and in the Chiricahuas and everything was wet, so everything was kind of quiet. And when I, in the process of doing my calling type thing, I stopped. And when I stopped, I heard footsteps.
Oops.
In the leaves, so I thought I'd better look back. I looked up, and the lion's coming down the hill. And when I looked, she's probably 8 steps away, back feet in front of her front feet, coming down the hill, just running. And I just reacted, and boom, shot type thing. I'm thinking to myself, get off me, boom. And she landed 5 steps in front of me, and she did end up getting up and getting away. But I got her. I found her.
Wow.
It can be exciting. Every calling stand can be an exciting, unforgettable experience. And
you know, there's a lot of words in the English language to describe what we do, but I don't think exciting quite covers that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I've been charged by a bear, and the pucker factor, when you don't have a weapon or you have a simple .38, you know, there is nothing in the world that can describe how everything just tightens up on you. You go, crap.
Oh, this is going to hurt.
This could hurt bad. Yep.
I've been there. Yeah, the pucker factor is alive and well.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. Amazing. We have a little bit of that in fishing, but not quite the same level.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're getting a, you know, 120 mile an hour closure rate on another boat coming head on. So I.
No, I'm not going there.
Yeah,
I've seen him navigate.
You know, Patrick won't go hunting with me anymore because we were, you know, wiping his hunting boots down with bacon grease. So here, you stand here by the tree, okay?
Serious scent factor.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would think in fishing, one of the things that would going marlin fishing without being strapped in might be.
No, we don't use a strap. You stand up and fight them head on. Oh, it's a challenge. There are some things on the saltwater side of life that will get your attention. Yeah, most definitely.
Most of the fact is that you can't see anything you can stand on other than the boat you're on.
Yeah.
If you're off that, you're dead.
Yeah, you know, Jaws did a lot of, I think, injustice to the great whites, but, you know, that's a whole nother conservation story. But the term, we're going to need a bigger boat, when you hear the captain say that, it's the pucker packer.
Yep.
So it's all good. So how often a year do you go out?
Oh.
You guys have, like, a season you prefer?
Started already.
Well, yeah, we usually prefer the fall and the winter. That's
what it's nice out here right now. Yeah. Just nice.
The furs are better then, and actually worth something, and I usually prefer the. And how often do I go out? Do I go out? There's no set time or a lot.
Yeah,
I go out a lot.
Giddy up, go!
Yeah, I get up. Yeah. I'm not married, so.
Yeah, I would say you must be single.
Yeah, I'm not married, so I can.
We know how that goes, right, Don?
I can do what I want.
Really?
No, you can't. No, you can't.
All righty, having said that, we're just going to sidestep that little comment.
You better. Stand
down. Thanks to our sponsors, including Bill and Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram at I-17 and West Camelback Road. Mm-hmm. Since 1927. Good, you got it.
After 368 times, yeah, I do.
We'll be right back. All righty, we're back. Before we get too far into Eddie's subject, Game and Fish has reopened this past Saturday, Lee's Ferry.
Yeah.
And Lake Powell.
Okay.
So, one word of caution, AIS enforcement is engaged. Game and Fish remains vigilant against the invasive species during the federal shutdowns. As we've talked about earlier, we had Tom McMahon in the pressure off of the Salt River Lake change is diminished quite a bit. A lot of pressure added to Lake Pleasance with the quagga mussels, LMBV, largemouth bass virus, and the LEs are out there from AZGFD. Conducting edumacation on clean drain and dry protocols.
And writing warnings?
They are.
So Mr. Hawaii 5-0 got him?
Yeah, boy.
Book him.
Yep, McMahon's on the hunt, so to speak. And, most of the boaters, according to Game and Fish, are cordial.
Why wouldn't they be?
Well, you have a badge and a gun and, you know, walkie-talkie. It's time to be nice. But the guys are, getting out and pulling their plugs. I don't quite get why they don't do that to begin with. Let's say average bass boat on the market today, if you bought a 20-footer with a 250, you're looking at $55,000 to $65,000. Why in the hell wouldn't you pull the boat plug and wipe it down? I'm not getting it, unless you're Sam Shattenberg, and which is a whole nother story. But anyway, be advised out there, regardless of where you are, pull your plug, clean, drain, and dry your boat. Drain the water jackets out of the motor, and if you have any aquatic particles on your boat trailer, man, wipe it down. January 1st, citations are over. So,
hey, the lakes don't have any water pressure things for people to spray the boats off with, did they?
That is coming.
Contamination stations?
Yeah. You roll in and...
They're coming. Yeah. There's been some grants given to Arizona Game and Fish via or in conjunction with Lake Havasu Marine Association. They're putting in a big decontamination station. And rumor has it there's a group working on decontamination stations for the Pleasant Harbor side and the county side of Pleasant, one for Bartlett, one for Roosevelt, and then looking at Apache Canyon, Swarway. Because, Eddie, in our world, if on the Salt River Lake chains, it's basically like taking your third grader to school with the measles. Yeah, at some point in time, they're all connected. If one of those lakes gets sick, they're all going to get sick.
I understand.
And then what comes out of Roosevelt dumps into Apache, Canyon, Saguaro, and then Canyon and Saguaro pump back lakes. So they're pumping the measles out of Saguaro back into Canyon, back into Apache, and it's just, man, we've got gizzard shad invasions on the Mother Lake, a largemouth bass virus, which so far we've dodged a bullet on that. It's a, when it does blow up, it's an indiscriminate killer of fish. It doesn't matter what it is. The good news on the gizzard shad side at Roosevelt, they handle stress very poorly. So when the golden alga, and we have that on the Mother Lake and down the chain, when they start getting stressed, they emit a toxin. And of the fish that we have in that ecosystem, the gizzard shad can't handle it. They just die. And a largemouth bass, they'll handle quite a bit of it. Catfish will handle more than the bass do. Their constitution's a little tougher. So I'm not going to tell you we're winning the fight, but you know, I'm very pleased to see Arizona Game and Fish and Aquatic Invasive Species kicking in on enforcement, because they've been doing educate. It kind of sounds like Jesse Jackson. You know, if we can't educate, we must regulate. Well, we're educating and we're regulating, and now we're citating. So
it only, I'm sorry, Don. Tom and I disagree pretty readily on this, and that is that when they had the OHV sticker come out, you had a six-month window where they educated. Stopped people, gave them advice, told them what they had to do, and then boom. The next year, 1st of January, they were hammering people.
Yeah.
Which they should do. And I'm sorry, when you educate for 5 years, ooh, at the end of that period of time, people are numb to it. There's no effect.
Well, I think you're right. And what I've been, you know, talking to the department about is if they pull up on a lake and a boat owner, let's say he's been here for more than 6 months, I'll give him a little window of getting dialed in. If they tell you, well, I don't know about that. I didn't know. Well, you pass highway billboards. You see there's 12 don't move a muscle signs on the harbor side. You get the little pamphlet notification in your watercraft renewal that comes in the mail to your house.
Right.
Then if you go down to...
if you ever call Game and Fish and you're put on hold, yeah, which invariably everybody is...
You'll be on there for 20 minutes.
You hear the PSAs all the time. You hear the PSAs on the radio stations ones. I mean, don't move a muscle. Okay, how many times have I heard that? Probably over the last 5 years, 3,000 times.
Easy.
Yeah, easily. And I've seen the billboards. Everybody has. You know what it is. I'm sorry, if you don't start enforcing it.
Well,
any of the federal laws we have now. Who cares?
I tried the same tactic on a photo radar ticket to the judge in Star Valley. Well, I didn't know. Bam, $285 just for being stupid.
If you go hunting and you've got a hunting license and you do something that's in the regs and you get stopped and you get cited, guess what? That's 5 years off. I don't see why people aren't losing their license for 5 years. You take a bass fisherman off the water for 5 years when he's got a $55,000 rig sitting there, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, it will. And I think there's ongoing education to other LEs, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department. I don't know how engaged Maricopa County Parks Rangers are going to get. They're fairly disengaged to begin with. And dealing with those guys, there is a new director, and I should temper that, saying that Dave, I think it's Jansen, is engaged, and he gets the muscle thing. City of Peoria,
You know, when you go into facilities, they have the most wanted thing posters when you go into the post office. Right. When you go into the city of Peoria, they have a least wanted, and there's a picture of Don, because every time he comes in, they know what he's going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've changed judges in Peoria. Judge Anderson is gone, and we have a new...
He liked you.
Man. Wow. He was tough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's
the kind of enforcement that should be on everything that we do. You gave a great presentation. He admired the way and all the energy that you spent. And when do you want to spend your time in class?
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you want to pay your fine? Yeah. We take cash, check, credit cards.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's going to be the drill, I think. And unfortunately, as with most things in America, somebody's going to be made an example of. I'll tell you firsthand, it will not be me. I clean, drain, and dry. Absolutely every single time.
Do they enforce this or have anything like that at the big box houses like Bass Pro, Cabela's? Because I'm trying to think. I don't see too much of it.
I'm sure that if stuff is out there somewhere. Yeah. You know, that's a good point. We can follow that up with Mr. McMahon.
I know I go to the Bass Pro Shop meeting monthly. That gets there, some local guys, and they have speakers. Bring it up there. I'll see what they can do.
Okay, cool. Having said that, we'll stand down. I'm Don McDowell.
John Colazar.
Jim Brown.
And Murdoch.
Yeah. We'll be back with some calling techniques. Cool. All righty, we're back. Back to Eddie Murdoch. Okay, give us an idea. How do you prepare for a hunt, first of all?
How do I prepare for a hunt?
Yeah.
Good question. Ideally, what you should do before you leave the house is take a shower in scent killer soap, human scent killer soap. That's ideally what you should do.
So Old Spice body wash is out the window.
Old Spice body wash is definitely out the window.
Don would be hurting at that point.
Really?
Do you ever smell it? Yeah. Come here on Sunday morning. I smell Old Spice coming through the door. And Don's here.
Yep. Okay.
One, I can't smell. One of the, and also to your
I
clothes.
I heard that.
Yeah.
I heard that up at one of your seminars.
It's true.
Interesting.
I can smell ammonia, but other than that, I can't.
Really?
I can put my nose in a jar of stink catfish bait and smell and breathe. No effect. No effect.
For me, I'm out in the woods and people go, what's the matter? And because I stopped dead, and I can always pick up that odor of a bull who's just, marked his spot. You know,
and it's amazing.
He's close.
It's amazing. It's amazing when being able not being, since I can't smell, when I've been with people that have smelled elk and have smelled javelina.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten, and we've actually ended up killing the animals. And it's just amazing to me, the power of, it's just amazing. Yeah. Another thing too, your clothes. You should wash your clothes. You don't want to wash your clothes in Tide or All or anything. Well, I do. Well, but you should use a scent killer soap on that also. It's something that, and it's besides killing, I guess it's the UV brighteners. It kills the UV. Tide will make your clothes glow in the woods, and you don't want your clothes to glow in the woods. You want to be dull. You want to use that too on your clothes.
Said that, we want to pass this along to you. We have a tan shirt for you here. This is happens to be the Bad Wolf shirt.
Oh, well.
Smoke them if you got them. We'll talk about that after a bit. But
okay. Well, thank you, Don. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so we know that we've got to remove as much of the possible of our body scent as well as our clothing.
I also use a non-scented deodorant. When I use no scent deodorant.
Oh, that's okay. Don doesn't use any deodorant.
But he still smells good.
Yeah.
Old Spice.
You know, I'm really not edumacated and backing that big truck up, John.
Oh, no. My Prius is dead meat.
Okay, then you want to get out into your area. Get out into your area, wherever, desert, junipers, pine country, wherever you're going to go. You want to be quiet. You're hunting animals that hunt other. What I like to imagine it too is, say you're going to sneak into somebody's bed. You're going to sneak into somebody's living room. You're going to sneak into somebody's living room, sit down and start calling and have the animal come to you. And without them knowing you're there. So the best thing to do, you want to try to be as quiet as possible. You want to try to be quiet. Hide your vehicle. Hide your vehicle. Don't slam the doors, my number
Never
one.
Never slam the doors.
Don't slam the doors. Don't slam the doors. And that's hard for a lot of people. I'm trained to, even in my civilian life, even when I'm in town, I don't slam my doors. I close my doors quietly. I try to keep good habits.
Mm-hmm. That's a good statement. It really is.
Well, I try to keep good habits. And I try to teach that to the other people that I take out, too. Because that's the number one thing they do usually is douche. Oops. Douche. Oops.
Next stop. 2 miles down the road.
What about your cell phone? Hey, have your cell phone on.
I don't have a cell phone. I don't own a cell phone.
That's good because that's always a killer.
Yeah, I don't.
The last man standing.
No matter where
Thank you,
are.
Eddie.
Yeah. I don't own one. Also, you don't want to talk out loud. You don't want to get out there and okay, we're going to go over here. And another thing too, try to load your gun quietly. Try to load up quietly. And some guys with the AR-15s, they have to make sure the bolt goes home type
Lock
thing.
Lock and load.
The metallic sound's not a good sound.
No.
Yeah.
By the way, weapon choice. Do you carry both a shotgun as well as a long-range rifle?
Sometimes I do. My weapon of choice is the shotgun, 12-gauge shotgun. That's my weapon of choice. And I usually end up...
Double-aught?
Nope. Double-aught's got me...
Goose load?
He only got nine pellets in a double-aught load.
And a goose load?
No. I use 3-inch number 4 bucks, what I like.
Ow.
3-inch number 4 buck. Has got 41 pellets. And it reaches out there a little bit. The longest shot, which I don't recommend, the longest shot has been 65 steps, though, as far as on a coyote. And it went down.
That is a long way for a coyote.
Shotgun. The loads they make now, these dead coyote loads, which cost $30 for a box of 5 or 10 or whatever it is, They cost $30, though. Those things, they'll reach out there, too. There's dead coyotes are really good load.
Eddie, what about scent masking? I did attend and listen very intently to your seminar, and you talked a little bit about using liquid smoke. Can you expand on that?
Well, the thing you don't want to do, you don't want to smell like a human when you go out there. And a lot of times, sometimes I won't use anything, and I'll just watch the wind. I just want to make sure the wind's in my face and walk into the wind and call into the wind and usually look into the wind and have somebody, if somebody's with me, have somebody else looking downwind because the coyotes sometimes will circle downwind to catch, okay, what's going on?
Do they come up? Do they come where they're downwind and they're coming at a sound or call? I've found that it's really hard to get them to come when the wind's in my face. They don't typically come that way. They do that loop.
Yeah, and I've killed so many coming right at me though. If you're quiet and get in there quiet and sit down and the wind's in your face and you make the noise and you fool them, I've had so many of them come in from upwind.
Really?
Yeah, so many of them. That's still what I do.
Which is why he's a professional and I'm not.
I'm not a professional.
That's not the rumor on the streets. No.
Well, I thought it curious. For years and years, I hated to get all smoky.
Yeah.
Only because I didn't care for it. But, it seems to be the thing to do.
Yeah.
And then he was talking about a bottle of liquid smoke.
That's one thing that I'll... there's liquid smoke you can put on. Liquid smoke you buy in the store that you put on meat.
Right.
Yeah. You put it in a spray bottle and with a little bit of water and spray it on you type thing.
Yeah.
And
baste him with a little barbecue sauce.
That is a hell of a lot better alternative than what I used to use, which was skunk scent.
Skunk scent, yeah.
I mean, there's not many places you go after you've done varmint hunting with skunk scent on.
No,
or you can with liquid smoke. You're welcome, but not skunk scent.
Yeah, and vanilla is another thing. You can use the vanilla. Yeah. The vanilla makes you with some, and I like using the imitation vanilla because it doesn't cost as much.
Right.
What about bees? Bees like you?
I have no experience with that.
Vanilla on you? The bees would
bees?
Yeah. That's a different smell.
I have had some experiences with bees, but I didn't have vanilla on me at the time.
That's never a good thing.
Yeah. Another thing you can do, too, is to make a fire. Make a fire. Let it burn down the coals, and then if you're in the desert, get green creosote bushes and put those on the coals.
The smoke.
Right.
Or
yeah.
If you're in a juniper country, put the junipers on the coals. Pine country, put the pine on the coals, and then get your clothes and get that in that thick smoke. You don't want the, when it turns to fire, you want to
remove it.
There.
Yeah, otherwise you've got tatters.
Right. And one other thing, too, is I usually wear a face mask. when you're smoking like that, don't put your face mask in that, because if you do, you'll cry. You'll cry. Yeah. But it does seem to help as far as, it does seem to help.
Masking the odor.
Masking the human scent. Does seem really, and the time that liquid smoke is, that's when the coyote bumped right into me. And came around, I was calling, and sprayed liquid smoke was on us in the morning. Walk out first in, and I'm sitting there calling, and wah, 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 wah. I'm looking to the left, and a coyote come around and to my right and hit me right in the thigh. Boom, hit me. And I looked, something hit me, so I looked and looked, and the coyote's right in my lap, and his face is looking at me. He's like looking at me like, no, his butt's in my lap. He's looking away from me. He's looking back at me. He's like, you're not a rabbit. I come around the bush to get a rabbit, and you're not a rabbit.
Tell me he didn't survive.
Oh, I about swallowed the call. I had a little call. I about swallowed it.
Yeah. I mean, you're sitting here all calm, cool, and collected, and yeah, he bumped into me. I'm like, yeah, I just wet my pants.
Yeah, he didn't survive. Good. I got him.
All right, you're going to give us a call?
Yeah, I'll give you some calls.
Come on, let's do it.
Okay.
We need to hear this.
Yeah.
Everybody button your ears down.
Okay, I'll start with a jackrabbit call, a big gravelly, gravelly jackrabbit call. And I'm going to start out, say it was first thing in the morning and everything is nice and quiet.
Right.
Everything's quiet. So instead of, I'll just do it. I'm going to call into my closed hand. Now, here we in the Phoenix Farmer Callers, we don't do the electronics. Nothing wrong with electronics, nothing wrong with them, but we try to teach the art of using the hand call.
Right.
So we're the ones, when we animals come called in or whatever, we're the bait. We're the ones that are being, they could be possibly eaten. First stand in the morning, no wind, everything's nice and quiet. Here it goes. Okay, wait a little bit, just like I'm doing. Okay, now I'm going to add a little bit more to it.
Jennifer's crying.
Okay, you do that a couple times, three times, whatever, this and that. It depends on how you feel. Maybe nothing's coming in yet, so you open up a little bit more.
Yeah, I would be. Oh,
here he is.
Shut that kid up.
Yeah.
That's the building manager.
I heard it over here.
Nice. Very cool. That's
okay. Awesome. I got more, but. Well,
yeah, I want to explore that a little bit. We've got to thank some of our sponsors once again, and you are?
Ed Murdoch.
Jim Brown.
John Colazar.
And Mac Navigator over here in the corner. I'm Don McDowell. We'll be right back.
Tired, too much work, and then the preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry.
All righty, we're back. Eddie's demonstrating some varmint calling techniques, and that was a jackrabbit. When you change up and go to the bird, and my brother's going to love this. He was thoroughly intrigued by a topwater bait. It was a mouse. Right. Yeah, we're up at ICAST, and we have 400,000 square feet of fishing tackle and paraphernalia. He goes, Don, look at that. It's a mouse. It's okay. They eat mice.
Well, sometimes they do eat. With me, it depends upon the terrain. It depends upon what kind of critters I think might be there. Example would be, say I was in juniper country, that they might have bobcats. Instead of using the big jackrabbit, I might use a cottontail, or I might use the bird, something different. In coyote country, especially hard-called coyote country, where they might be used to a rabbit call, certain roads get called quite a bit. And
was on my list of mental questions to ask, is how immune are these guys becoming to various calls.
I think the electronic calling thing might be hurting the trade a little bit, might be hurting the opportunities a little bit. You can buy a $10 call instead of using these. Of course, these are only $10 too. Some of these hand calls are, but you can buy a $10 electronic call, $10-$15 electronic call that has different voices on it, real animal voices on it.
Sure.
And people that don't know what they're doing will put them on top of their truck and play them and educate things. Educate critters. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some of the systems that are like $150.
Yeah, that Fox Pro is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they can go up higher than that.
Oh, yeah.
A whole lot higher than that. Yeah.
So you're telling me that, I mean, obviously, if somebody's dumb and they put that on the top of their vehicle and an animal comes within 300 yards and looks up and goes, are you kidding me? You think I'm coming into that?
Yeah.
No.
It's a Chevy.
Happening. Yeah. It's a Prius. My God, I'm out of here. You get shot by anything driving a Prius, you deserve to
that
be ejected.
That would be the high-pitch one. Yeah.
Be nice. Come on.
I'm just saying.
I ain't saying. I know.
Yeah, especially a coyote, the coyote, I've heard said, and I believe that the coyote's one of the smartest critters in North America.
They have to. They have to be. They've got 100% range on the lower 48s. And
now they do. They didn't always, but now
they do. Well, I know. They're one of the most adaptive animals we have, quite frankly.
They don't have to eat meat like a wolf. They can. They'll eat mesquite beans. They'll eat juniper berries. They'll eat melons. But if a coyote comes in and sees, say, 300 yards out or 100 yards out or 50 yards out and sees
something. Anything.
He sees the vehicle there and people are walking around talking or this and that and the thing is playing and people don't know what they're doing. They come in and they, like happens sometimes too, they come in and they get shot at or whatever and get missed and they can teach things.
I can get that.
Yep.
No problem.
Next time they hear the call, the same sound, like, oh, why don't you go see what it is?
You're up.
Yeah. I get the mouse thing, but, I really wasn't familiar with nor heard of anybody using a bird distress.
The bird distress.
I've seen that, and they have the woodpecker that's one wing keeps swinging around like it's in distress.
Flaps a little bit, and stops, and flaps a little bit more. I've got that one too. In fact, I lost mine. You don't have mine, do you?
I don't know. I found mine. You weren't up in 4A, were you?
Yes, I was. One of my favorite elk units.
Okay, I smell a knife fight coming on.
Yeah, some card call there is, it's where they, like I said, where they might have heard the rabbit. So change it up a little bit, maybe use a bird. And my bird might be different than some other birds, but I'll do a little short demo of it. And this is also this bird thing that I do. What I'm trying to envision when I'm doing it is I'm trying to think of sparrows going around fighting each other, this and that, so on and so forth. It's the only sound I've used that's called in the lions, too. That's the only one I've seen lions called with a fawn distress also, but this is the one that I've called as far as lions. This is the one that I've called. Here goes.
Sounds like my ex-wife on a bad weekend.
JK?
What were you doing to her?
None. That's the point.
That's my version of the bird. And it works for coyotes. It works for cats. It works for
cats, birds.
You know what? That does sound a little like, too, though. It sounds like kits fighting.
Kids?
I mean, coyote kits.
I just thought of
that. When it struck me, it sounded like coyote kits, you know, having an argument, you know, where they're...
Yeah, in the spring I usually switch to turkeys, so I'm not the coyotes. Of course, really? I do call in coyotes every once in a while. Calling turkeys, but yeah, I switch to turkeys in the spring. Oh, I'm addicted.
What were you using when the bear came to visit?
When the bear came to visit, okay. Then I was sounding something like a kid crying, something like this. Like a kid crying. That's what I. That's what
slap
I was
him.
About.
Slap him. Yeah. Slap me.
No, that's not how I usually call bears. When I call bears, I usually do something a little bit different. I usually do a rabbit distress. I try to put a lot of garble and a lot of stuff to it. Or I'll do what's called a fawn distress, or my version of the fawn distress, which is more like.
Oh, that is a. I've heard that. That yeah. is a fawn distress call.
And that works on bears. That works. I've seen one lion called that died in dos cabezas with that. Coyotes. Foxes.
Ever call up another hunter?
Oh, every once in a while you call in other hunters and you call in and hikers or campers or whatever. You'll hear them. Usually you hear them first. You say, I heard it over here. I heard something yeah. over here.
I was hunting up at Clint's Wells at this was back quite a while ago, and we had archery elk tags, and you could shoot turkeys and a number of other things, and I stalked a hunter for about 40 minutes. Yeah. He was pretty good. He gave his position away when he started laughing. All right. Unfortunately, folks, it's time for roll call for the week of October 13th. This week we have six soldiers to tell you about killed in action in theater. Two Army Rangers, a nurse, Army criminal investigator were killed by a roadside bomb in Afghanistan on October the 6th. First up here, Army Sergeant Patrick C. Hawkins died October 6th, 2013, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. 25 years old, of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, assigned to the 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, Fort Benning, Georgia. Hawkins was moving to aid a fellow fallen comrade when he was killed.
Army Captain Jennifer M. Marino died October 6, 2013, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. She was 25 years old, of San Diego, California, assigned to the Madigan Army Medical Center Joint Base Lewis McChord, Washington. Marino, who was on her first deployment, was commissioned into the Army as a nurse.
Army PFC Cody J. Patterson died also October 6, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. 24 years old, of Philomath, Oregon, assigned to the 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment at Fort Benning, Georgia. And PFC Cody was the poster child for the Ranger Regiment.
Army Sergeant Joseph M. Peters died October 6. He was 24, of Springfield, Missouri, assigned to the 5th Military Police Battalion of Vicenza, Italy. Was on his third deployment. The two previous deployments were to Iraq.
Lance Corporal Jeremy M. Collins, Jr. died October 5th, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom, 19 years old, of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, assigned to the Combat Logistics Regiment, 2nd Marine Logistics Group, Expeditionary Force out of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
Army Specialist Angel L. Lopez died October 5th, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom, 27 years old, of Parma, Ohio, assigned to the 201st Brigade Battalion, died of wounds in Zabul Province, Afghanistan, when the enemy forces attacked his unit with small arms fire.
Our hearts and prayers to those folks and their families in their units. We're going to finish this up after the break. I'm Don McDowell.
Shake, Rattle, and Troll, a show for the serious fisherman, as well as the novice looking for tips from the pros. Shake, Rattle, and Troll is brought to you by Bill Luke Dodge Chrysler Jeep. Now, here's your host, saltwater fisherman and tournament pro, Don McDowell.
All right, we're back. Thanks for joining the second hour of Shake, Rattle, and Troll. Eddie Murdoch from Phoenix Bomber Callers here. Jim Brown from Fish Clipper and Robo Westy, JK, ADA, and Safeguard Business Systems. I want to finish up roll call. We've got a couple other notations. Good friend, longtime good friend, Robert H. Ruley II passed away of natural causes on October 1st. And Bobby was a former U.S. Marine as well. Served in Vietnam and one hell of a cat fisherman. And one thing I can say about that guy, everybody loved him. Just a nice guy. In fact, we're going to proclaim October 1st as National Red Beanie Day. Because I don't care what the temperature was outside, Bob always had on a red beanie. Go figure.
Mm-hmm.
This is Bill Ruley's brother. And Bobby was born June 9th in 51. Very loved son, brother, father, grandfather, best friend, and uncle. And everybody that knew Bobby just loved him. They're, the family's putting Bobby to rest today. And our thoughts stay with them as we move through the weekend. A little update on Seth Wakeling, Brian Wakeling's son, our big game chief at AZGFD, got a communication from him that Seth's spirits are holding up well. He does have, obviously, losing his left foot, a lot of work in front of him, but I found it interesting. They've got him in an amputee center in Texas, and one of the fellows that was in there with Seth was talking to Brian Wakeling, Seth's dad. Introduced himself and referred to Seth's wound as identical to his own, and they're calling it a paper cut. And reason being in there, the bulk of the folks that are in there have multiple amputations. And one of the things, you know, John Q. Public doesn't understand, when you get hit with an IED, it's about a 2,500-degree flash, if built correctly. And fortunately, the one...
Thank God the raghead did it wrong.
Yeah, he did it. But, you know, certainly our prayers and thoughts will continue to the Wakeling family and certainly with Seth. And we'll follow his progress. So that's a good thing. And, again, our thoughts out to the Ruley family. So anyway, having said that, we'll keep you posted as we go along. Eddie, how much credence do you put in to clear water or camouflage? Queen clear water. Where did that come from? I'm sorry.
Oh, flashback 60s, Dad.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that kind of camouflage.
Yeah. Run through the jungle. I'm sorry. Can you stop the rain? reason I ask, you know, back in the day, I went to the trouble of hiding in the bushes with various patterns on and taking black and white photos to right. see what works the best. And I have my own theory, you know, Realtree and Advantage, you know, all this stuff. I mean, there's camouflage patterns for everything. Ducks, right. grass, you know.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
Well, camouflage, to me, you don't absolutely have to have camouflage on. I mean, Jerry Blair, famous author and ex-highway patrolman, lives up in Flagstaff. He's written a couple predator calling books. He went out calling predator calling in a Santa Claus suit and was successful.
Oh, that's wrong.
What?
Yeah. Hey, he was successful. Yeah. A Santa Claus suit. So you really don't have to have it. There's an old movie. The old movie is the old, what was the guy's name? Coyote Safari is the name of the movie. And I think Del Western is the guy. He's an old club member. He used to call with a white cowboy hat on back in the early days. They used to set blinds up and he had a white cowboy hat on and they'd call and he'd be the caller and he'd call coyotes in this and that. So of course things have changed since then. Coyotes, I think, have gotten a little bit more wary. I think camouflage helps. I think it helps. You don't have to have it, but I think it helps. To me, what I saw, when I talk about the club, I talk about we're a bunch of guys and some gals that like to dress up in camouflage and go sit in front of a bush and call things in and have fun. So I really think camouflage helps. I've had coyotes come in, so on and so forth, and I've got certain pictures too. What I usually like to do is break it up. I'll have a certain color. I'll have brown on the bottom and have some green up on top or something like that. And there are and I still do the regular patterns, although it's more of advantage. I guess it's advantage is what it is.
Yep.
Advantage camouflages. There's also leafy wear, the 3D stuff, the 3D leafy wear and the
ghillies. I like the leafy wear top, yeah.
Yeah, the leafy wear and the ghillies. And I'd like the top, too. I usually don't wear the bottoms, yeah, because they don't have the pockets, and I want pockets.
What I found that works about the best is a black pair of cargo pants with the leafy top.
Really?
And the hat. I've taken my, for lack of a better term, it's a Vietnam floppy jungle hat.
Right.
And took some stuff and little strips of cloth, you know, about 6 inches long, and hot glued it all over that hat.
So it blows in the wind.
Yeah, it blows like in my face. You know, it hangs down in your face a little bit, breaks up the human pattern. Yeah.
Kind of like we did when we put the hats on and we had the mullets in the back. We glued those on, the little blonde curls.
Sweet.
Eddie.
Is he giving out too much information here?
we had Don McDowell look like they.
I've got to back that big truck up to get out of here. I'm just saying.
And do you like the black cargo? I never. Nat gear is one of the patterns I wear. Nat gear bottoms.
I spend a lot of time up north, and I find the black. Integrates with the pine trees.
Especially when you take the black and white photos?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just a thought.
But I really think camouflage can help, and what you should do is you should sit in front of the bush or try to get in the shade and be in front of the bush. You really don't want to sit behind things. You want to sit in front and make yourself a space or whatever, and if an animal comes in and say he stops and he's looking at you and he's only plays 10 yards away and the coyote's looking at you, you can possibly get away with, if you got camouflage against camouflage the way I sit anyway, you can possibly get away with taking the animal as far as just even getting away with slow movements and it's possible. Camouflage against camouflage. Of course, my shotgun's camouflaged also.
Of course, yeah.
Weapons are.
Now, why do you sit in front and not behind it?
Because that way the camouflage helps break up your outline, helps break up the human outline. You're sitting behind you.
But you're hiding behind it when you're.
You know, if you are sitting behind, you're
cutting your field of vision down too.
You're cutting your field of vision down. You're making movement as far as you're going to have to raise up to contrast. Do this and that, so on and so forth. And yeah, even with turkeys, it should be in front. You should be sitting in front. And I know one guy.
You're not going to outsmart a turkey. Mm-hmm. Trust
no,
me.
Never. Mm-hmm. How about snap? I mean, you obviously have to do a lot of snap shooting.
Oh, and I do. As far there's some guys that use shooting sticks as far as with the rifle, and some guys with the shotgun too. They use shooting sticks, and it probably helps them on their long range shooting. But I don't know. I'm a shotgun hunter. I usually set up in shotgun stuff. I will take out both weapons sometimes, depending on terrain. But usually I can shoot offhand. Okay.
You carry a handgun?
No, it's extra weight. To me, it's just extra weight.
You know, I have a question too, and this brought yesterday. Dominic Lapano and Dave Bruns and his wife Renee and their daughter Paige. We were all up in 20B, and
Bradshaw's.
Yeah, it was. Well, we were up by Dugas Road.
Okay,
we had a youth deer camp up there, and you know, for the kids who had their deer tags, and you know, we were offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, basically for those kids who came in and needed a little help. Game and Fish was there. But we had a rancher stop by, and he showed us a picture that a deer hunter had taken a 7-foot-long Western Diamondback up there 3 weeks
ago. Yikes.
He was holding it, and I said, either that guy's a midget, I said, or that is one of the longest Western Diamondbacks I've seen in a long time.
What was its girth?
It was huge. It was like a shop vac size.
Was it an old picture, though?
No. This was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Ooh.
He had it on his iPhone, so I know it's recent.
I've heard of some people calling in snakes. I haven't done it myself, but I've heard it.
Do you see a lot when you're out there?
I do see some. I do see some here and there. And where I see most of the snakes is walking in at night for bear in the wilderness, walking in for bear at night. That's where you see the snakes. You're dodging. We used to go up without flashlights and go and come back down on Sunday and go up Friday night and come back down on Sunday, and we'd see in the morning, we'd see rattlesnakes on the side of the road. So we started taking them, using the flashlights at night, and like, whoa, there's a snake. Oh, there's a snake there. And I don't kill them. I just make them buzz, take their picture, and keep walking.
I have a list of rules that I live by, and I think rule 9, no, that's...
11 and 9, 3.
Yeah, it's 11. never go into the woods without a flashlight in the dark. I'm just...
Rule number one for me, anything that rattles goes down.
Yeah, no eyebrows or shoulders.
Whack!
We'll be back after the 7-foot rattlesnake.
7 foot.
No.
Oh, yeah, tequila.
Tequila and hunting, does it go together? No.
After hunting, it does.
No. Oh, yeah, I'm in on that one. Yeah. Woo, 7-foot rattlesnake, that'll make you go woo.
Big time.
Okay, so, you know, snakes.
That is okay. The one thing I can't stand.
All right, Eddie, help me out here. Why do you go in the woods at night without a flashlight?
No, I'm not necessarily the woods. I'm talking about the wilderness.
Whatever.
Well, the wilderness
is a little different than the woods.
And again, that's what we used to do. And we'd had flashlights then. We just, the moon was out or this and that, so we figured we didn't need them. We're just walking a trail. We're walking a trail 6 miles in, 7 miles in. We didn't need them. But we know better now. We know better now. We know better.
This is where Mr. Murdoch, earned this particular title of an extreme
yeah,
hunter. Keep going.
Well, as far as the wilderness, in the wilderness, you can't take a bicycle, you can't take a car, you can only walk or take a horse or a mule. That's the only ways to get in.
There's no prohibition on flashlights.
No, there's no prohibition on flashlights. But, you know, that's what we used to do.
Why I like hunting in November, December, January, and February, because they are burrowed down. You're not going to see a snake in, elevation. Okay, if you're 7,000 feet and above, you're hard-pressed to see a snake in November.
Yeah. And the bears, the best time to see bears is in September. Oh, September, first part of September. Last part of August, best part of September, first part of September, as far as in the prickly pear cactus type thing, that's the best time to see the bears is then. And if you go in the wilderness and get in there to certain places there, you go in the wilderness, you have no competition.
No.
Most people don't walk. If they do walk, they walk 1 or 2 miles and that's it. Like I said, I go six, seven, spay. Space blanket, sleep in a space blanket. Drink. You got to find water like an animal. You got the water pump type thing. The first needs water pump, I eat trail mix during the day. I eat trail mix and grasshoppers and acorns and manzanita berries and during the day and at night have one can of cold ravioli.
Survivor man.
It's just that can of cold ravioli is really good.
That's good stuff.
Trail mix.
Yeah.
All day. Yeah. And you'll find critters out there. In the wilderness.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah, yeah. And there are snakes. Like I said, there are snakes. You walk in at night, you will see snakes.
Any sign of Bigfoot?
No. I do have one of my favorite bear pictures is my foot next to a big black bear print in the ground, which is just as big as my foot, if not bigger. That's one of my favorite, but it's not Bigfoot. It's a black bear.
It's the Squatch.
We haven't had a Squatch sighting in a while.
I saw some on the internet a few weeks ago about someone.
I thought I saw heard something about that too in Arizona.
Yeah.
I thought I heard something. Yeah.
I didn't read it though.
Favorite place for bears?
Favorite place for bears? Unit 22 and Unit 23. Well, Unit 23. Unit 22 used to be good, but the fires have killed a lot of stuff there.
You go on the backside of Roosevelt? Going up the back in through there, through that wilderness area off the Cherry Creek Road?
Well, in the wilderness, it's usually the Matazels. 2300, I had different places.
Yeah.
It's not really the wilderness there. It's places that are.
There's a couple areas off McFadden Peak that's wilderness. I went in there with one of the Game and Fish guys. Mm-hmm. We were looking for potential. They had some dirt tanks that they really, really wanted to get mechanized equipment on. And Tana was going to grant them the right to go down this trail that they had. They were going to take a dozer in for 6 miles. We walked in there to see the tanks that they had. And you talk about an abundant wildlife sign, but there were some great prickly pear areas there. Yeah. Just fabulous.
Hmm. I mean, I'll have to take that into consideration. Yeah.
Wow.
I'll have to take that into consideration. Yeah.
What's your advice to selecting a call? Any particular manufacturer better than another?
Yeah.
Or is it more operator?
Yeah, it would be the type of call, especially if you're just starting out. And it's hard to, on the radio, you can't see things, but they have calls called closed read calls, where the actual metal read piece is inside the call. Those are one of the easier ones to use. Another one is called a bite down call.
I like the bite downs.
Yeah, the bite downs. You can do a lot of things with the bite down. A bite down, one example of a bite down would be a Primos catnip. And let me do a few things on a Primos catnip real quick. Primos catnip, you can do a lot of things with a Primos catnip. You can do that little bird thing. And you can do just various wild stuff. Bite downs are, you can do a lot of things with them.
Do the mouse thing one time.
Mouse thing, I can't do anything really but the critter call. The critter call, the peewee critter call, get on the very, very tip of the critter call. And the critter call is an open recall where the reed is actually exposed. It's not
right.
In like the bite down or the closed reed. Mouse.
That calls a lot like the hyper call that I use for cow.
Cottontail? Jackrabbit?
More vibration for the reed.
And you could even howl with them.
That'll get you shot. You better quit it.
Jennifer's staring at him hot and heavy.
open recall.
We're going to owe her about $40.
I know. Over with. Sorry, Jen.
Open recalls are usually a little bit harder to learn how to use, though.
Do you ever use a mouth diaphragm for any of that stuff? I use that for cow calls and stuff.
I have used mouth diaphragm, mostly for turkey, mostly for elk. And there's a bear calling video by, what's the guy's name? Bear calling. It's bear calling by, I can't think of it. Wayne Carlton.
Okay.
He's got a diaphragm in his mouth and he's calling coyotes and he's shooting them with a bow. And he sounds pretty darn good on the thing. Usually with diaphragms, I don't get the amount of noise that I want. I can't get the volume that I want. Although, you can bugle with the thing, so.
Oh yeah. I've done both.
Yeah.
But we'll just predator calling without the tube. I don't know.
You have a grunt tube up to your mouth. It's pretty hard to get your rifle up at the same time.
Yeah,
I'm a shotgun hunter.
Excuse me, shotgun.
Thank you.
yours is point and click.
Well, what's your advice to a guy wanting to get started?
Join a club. Join a predator calling club. Join a predator calling club.
No, Jim Brown's over here taking notes.
Yeah. Join a predator calling.
You're right on the edge of coyote country where you live.
Hey, they're out there every night. That's what I was. You know, I was talking during break. You know, my folks have a place up in Pine, and they all go up there calling all the time, and coyotes and javelina, and I'm just like, that'd be kind of cool, sit on the balcony and just kind of talk to them.
Speaking of javelina, you can call in javelina too.
Really?
And you can call in deer. That fawn distress will call in deer that I was doing earlier. That'll also call in deer. Some places the deer will come, especially mule deer and white-tail does, especially, and mule deer. Mule deer will come in, the does will come in, they'll be ready to stomp something in the ground.
Yeah, they will.
Puffing fire. And I hear in moose country, it's kind of dangerous to do this kind of stuff because moose will hurt you.
Yeah, big time.
Anything over 900 pounds, I'm not going to mess with.
But
I'm going to draw the line at about 250.
No.
Yeah.
Javelina will come to a call too. They will come to a predator call. The reason why, maybe it's to protect their young. They think their young's in trouble or whatever, but they will come to a call. And with that, I do more of the garble thing too. More of the, and they'll just come running. And when you want them to stop, you just stop calling.
You irritate the hell out of them.
They'll come. And if you walk away on all fours instead of on two, they'll just keep circling you. Yeah.
That's cool.
All righty. I think when we come back, we're going to get to fishing. I'm Don McDowell with
Thank you. Thank you. Ed Murdoch.
You Murdoch.
John Colazar.
I'm stunned.
I am too.
Music to drive your big truck by. Nice! Or James Guggenhauer, our master rod builder from downtown Payson, Arizona. James, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Don. How are you, sir?
We're getting edumacated on calling critters.
Hey, I was going to say, you guys need to stop using those calls. You got my German short hair attacking.
I knew that.
Nice. Sorry about that.
And then I had another question. Do those things work on wolves?
Yeah.
No, that's my question. Thanks. Well, I was going to go there later, but sooner is better. What about wolves?
Wolves are a predator. I don't know why a predator call wouldn't work on a...
Yeah, have you had an encounter or a sighting yet?
I have had some sightings in Unit 27 as far as wolves. I haven't called one in, but I have had sightings. I have had some sightings, yeah. One of the things that would really probably work on wolves, being as territorial as they are, and they don't like coyotes. They kill coyotes. If you were to coyote howl in wolf country and make a ruckus of it, I think you might get visited.
There you go.
I think it might
work.
We
need to perfect that.
After our official report, I want to respond to that.
Yeah, we do.
All right, back to you, James. What's happening on the fishing front?
Hey, the first thing, Mr. Nick Walter with the Arizona Game and Fish Department wrote a very excellent update on the status of lakes and streams throughout Arizona, detailing the impact of the federal government shutdown. And so I encourage everyone to go to the Game and Fish website, click on the weekly fishing report, and in there you will see a status of all the lakes around. Now, he cautions that it's very fluid. Things are changing almost daily as far as what's open and what's closed. So he advises you to call ahead if you can and check on the status. And I know the Gila County Sheriff's Office up here can give updates on some of the lakes and streams up north here. I talked to him earlier this week, and I think he did a fine report on there. So I encourage everyone to go take a look at that.
Good.
Now, for Roosevelt Lake, the water level stayed constant last week at 45% full. However, as we get further from the monsoons, the flows into the lake are starting to slow. The Salt River is above 200 cubic feet per second. The Tonto Creek is flowing at just a trickle. And those are about the normal flows for this time of year. So it's going to stay like that now until we get some more rain or snow in the wintertime. But the lake is 45% full, and that's a good sign going into the winter months here. Bass fishing was called good this past week, and we've been talking the last couple of weeks, Don, about the bass moving kind of from the main lake points into the shallow portions of the coves, and they're still back there.
Nice.
Topwater baits in the morning.
Ooh, yeah.
Getting lots of success, and even the frog. It's a little late in the season for frog baits, but I'm still hearing good reports of guys using frogs and ricos. This was the first week that ricos came in with the pop water, or recently the first report that they seem to be going pretty well. But the major thing guys are doing is after that pop water bite, they're switching over to crankbaits. You want to run crankbaits that go in the 15 to 20-foot range, and the technique that guys are using is to crank that thing down as hard as you can, let it sit there for about 5 seconds, do 2 to 3 more cranks on the handle, followed by another 5-second pause. So not as steady. In the springtime, a lot of times, we just kind of burn those crankbaits through the water.
Anybody popping them?
Right, yeah, exactly. More of a stop-and-go kind of action to them seem to be reported. And then, as always, the You know, a Texas ring 6-inch worm is working, weightless sinkos. And here's a tip for guys that like to fish sinkos. You want to rig them more like a Texas style rather than a wacky style. The Texas style weightless sinko is working this past week. And then jigs and drop shots were also reported successful.
Let's back up the bus on the sinkos. Are you suggesting a light wire or a heavy wire 4 or 5-aught hook?
I personally go with light wire hooks for everything. Unless I'm fishing a heavy jig, I'm going to use a light wire hook. And yes, probably a 5 extra wide gap, and I'm a Gumagosu kind of fan with hooks, so that's what I use.
I'm going to send you some Daiichis.
Well, you know, those ones you gave me, Don, I fished those, and I like those, too.
Do you prefer the bleeding hook or a standard black?
I go with the red bleeding every time I can get it.
Okay, cool.
That little bit of red that's on the bottom, and I don't care what you're fishing, that little bit of red showing me makes a difference. And maybe it's just me, but I hardly don't go without it anymore.
Okay.
The other good news, crappie fishing is getting better by the week. Everybody knows that October and November and into December are like prime crappie fishing season. And it's more because our weather is more stable. You know, the big winds are gone and, you know, the monsoons have kind of subsided. So here where we just have nice crisp mornings and heating up a little bit today, the crappie just seem to school up a little better right then. So what guys are doing is they are out there looking for brush. They will always be in the brush, and they're looking for locations. And if they can find 4 or 5 spots that they can fish in the morning, they're probably going to catch 20 crappie out there, or even a limit of 25 now. They're in 25 to 35 feet of water, and as I said, fishing vertically right into the brush. The 2-inch grub tail baits.
What color?
Pardon me?
What color?
In a John Deere or the black, blue, and blue, black, and chartreuse color.
Okay, bingo.
Yep. Are the two that are in there. 1/16 ounce or 1/8 ounce jig hook. So you're fishing very light. You're probably using an ultralight rod. You really need to be able to feel your way down through that brush. But, yeah, the crappie are getting good reports here, and I'm glad to report that for a while because we know that the crappie are being impacted by the gizzard shad there. So it's good to see at least some numbers are still being caught, even if we can't catch them all year long. The other thing is the urban trout stocking program has started. Up here in Payson, Green Valley Lake was stocked this past week for the first time, and some of the valley lakes will start there. You can go again to the Arizona Game and Fish website, and you can see which lakes are being stocked, which ones and how many. Also, we've been talking about doing the fish study at Roosevelt Lake, and I talked to Kurt Gill this week, and he has it scheduled for October 28th through the 30th.
Nice.
This will be a fish shocking study of Roosevelt Lake. And for those that are familiar, been listening to the show for a while, they know that they're trying to understand the impact of the gizzard shad that are in Roosevelt Lake. And this study hopefully is going to give them a better idea of the fish population and distribution in Roosevelt Lake.
Well, you having said that, let me tell you, I want to give a big shout out to the Bass Federation. Donated the first $500 into the fish stocking fund for Cantrell. There's a new account open up there. And then a big thanks to my brother Patrick and Ron Schofield. And again, Curtis Gill. We were out to Region 6 and made 16 reef ball bases. We're looking for another load of plywood to total out about 32 reef ball bases. So we're getting close on getting ready to pour.
Sweet. Yeah, you know, that structure thing is good for all of our lakes, no matter where they go. Now, those ones are destined for saguaro. Is that right, Don?
The first batch of 30, yes.
Right. And so we're looking forward to that. I know that Chief Cantrell is evaluating Roosevelt for those. So.
Actually, he's antelope hunting. He's not evaluating anything other than a long-distance shot. Just say.
Won't be any sense in pestering him this week, huh?
Well, you know, I mean, go figure. You know, Five Lakes and Region 6 are closed. Let's go antelope hunting.
Right? Yeah. Good deal. Well, we are happy that the Game and Fish is doing this study. I think it's going to prove valuable information. And then they will also follow that study up in late November. They're going to have another roundtable meeting where we will learn the results of that study and the go-forward plan for Roosevelt Lake and the rest of the Salt River lakes down there.
Okay, hopefully by then we'll have some information on the proposed gillnet eradication program. I think the RFPs go in mid-November. I don't know what the sunset date is, but we'll figure that out as we move through. But the federal government has to come back to work.
Someday.
Yeah, before anything. You know, one of the things, if people don't go to the website to look at that, about the closures on the different lakes, there are on each of the lakes up here, Roosevelt and Apache and Kenya, they have private marinas that have ramps. And to our knowledge, those are all open, although there is a fee involved to use them.
Well, I've been suggesting the fellows that take advantage of that they save the receipt. And when the folks at Tonto National Forest get back to work, you go down and knock on the door and give them a bill for your refund.
Well, and that makes sense. Those of us that buy a yearly pass, we would assume that whatever time we can't use them, that would be deducted, right?
Right. Okay, we got to get this thing wrapped up. What else?
Hey, one more thing. If you're looking to get a very nice high-powered rifle or sportsman thing, go to www.ultimatesportsmansgiveaway.com. There's a drawing going on. It helps the Payson High School up here. They're only selling 400 tickets, and they're giving rifles away that are worth over $1,000.
Wow.
So encourage everybody to go check that out.
All right, we'll get that up on the SRT website. You have a blessed day, and sorry for pestering your dog.
Yeah, thanks.
Or not. All right, we're going to stand down, take a break, come back, get this train wreck back on the tracks. We'll be back. Yeah, man, catch him if you can. A little quick update on the fish count from H&M Landing for yesterday, October the 12th. 31 anglers went on. Out on a boat, 155 yellowtail, 30 yellowfin tuna, 8 Dorado, and 2 little skipjack.
Uh-oh.
The day boats, they had 4 boats out, 103 anglers on the one-day excursions, 110 bluefins. So you can kind of see where bluefins are in a little tight. 9 skipjack following those guys up. The Malahini boat was out, had 33 guys on it. They whacked 12 yellowtails, a bunch of rockfish. We don't care about rockfish. And then Friday, day and a half boats, 54 anglers on 2 boats, 270 yellowtail, 29 yellowfin, 24 Dorados, 3 skipjacks. And on the one-day boats for Friday, 2 boats went out, 45 anglers again. Nothing but bluefin, 110 of those guys, 12 skipjacks.
What's a skipjack?
Cat food.
Okay. Precursor to bad fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to go. We got to go. Week after next, man. We have got to do it. So.
I got a deer hunt I'm guiding up in 3C.
Well. Oh, well.
Yeah, you'll think of me finally and right off, and is this what you're telling
yeah,
me?
Yeah, fish on.
I bring the steaks, you bring the fish.
Yeah.
Fillets.
All right, back to you, Jim. Any final parting words on behalf of Fish Clipper?
Well, I would just have to say, you know, go to our website, fishclipper.com. Go to our products page. We have all kinds of tackle on there. We do have the Westy Worm Classics. We do have the new Robo Westy that I'm going to be putting new ones up here for the holidays.
And where'd you get the Hey Jack hat?
Oh, my daughter got it for me for my birthday. So
nice.
Yeah. She knows I like those guys.
No. Well, that could be Jack's Link or Jack Daniels, which is...
Well, no, it's just, hey, Jack from, you know where it's from, don't you? What program, what show is that from?
Yeah, hey, Jack.
The Duck Callers, Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have cable.
Hey, Jack.
I thought it was Jack's Link. They just came out with the burrito jerky, John.
I feel so left out. I don't have cable, and I have never watched one episode of Duck Dynasty.
I don't have cable either.
I like watching it because these guys, you know, made something of themselves, and I figure if they can do I can do it.
I'm not getting it. You know, National Geo and Discovery are taking these homeless folks and making them TV stars. You got the Duck Dynasty, the Gator Boys.
Yeah, they're not homeless. Believe me, they're not homeless.
Not anymore.
Oh, they weren't even before the show came out. He's made a fortune out of duck calls.
All right. Go figure. All right. What else?
Yeah, but the, you know, the things are, you know, my product's going well. You know, like I say, right now at the holidays, you know, around the holidays, it's crankbaits. But we got good deals on our site. You know, I got 20% off, free shipping. So you can't beat it right now through the end of the year. And I'm going to be keeping adding new Robo Westies all the time. I got new colors coming out. So just keep checking us out. You know, we're hitting it hard and keep trucking along. So
I have a suggestion for a name for you for one of them.
What's that?
An Obama Shad.
Oh.
But that sounds political.
Maybe?
No. All right, back to you, Eddie. Any shout out for membership?
Phoenix Barber Callers. Yeah, if you're interested in predator calling or have an interest in it, we have our meetings first Tuesday of every month, 12851 North 19th Avenue. That's the lodge number 2 of 19th Avenue and Cactus.
Oh, yeah. It's on the west side, right on the bottom of the hill.
At the bottom of the hill, right.
Nice.
Yep. First Tuesday of every month. Again, the website, www.pvci.org. And they do have a hunting forum on there. You can ask questions, so on and so forth. And,
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. What's it cost to join the club?
$35 is the initial cost, $35 for a year, and then $25 a year after that. And we are a family-oriented club. We hunt in the fall and the winter, but we do have a Christmas party coming up first Tuesday of...
I might come to that.
Of December there, first Tuesday. And there'll be things there... Donations and so on. So there'll be a lot of things there that you can win.
Do you play country music at the party?
We could. We could.
I can teach him to dance that night. Get enough liquor in somebody, I can teach anybody to dance.
Yeah. Really? And during the spring and summer, we have family oriented events, barbecue, fishing contests.
Those are cool. The camp outs.
Trail clearing. We maintain the Sea Canyon Trail up north. Up in 4A, Sea Canyon Trail. I think it's trail number 184. Christopher Creek to Promontory Butte to Christopher Creek Hunter Survival Trail. We've been maintaining that thing for over 50 years, I believe.
Oh my goodness.
It's a good club. Good club, but we are a hand call club too, so we try to teach the art of using the hand calls. So.
That is a skill versus just simply, I know I've been with the APC for years, and they have the electronic gear that you can use.
And APC is a good club also. Oh, the APC is a good, they're in Mesa. They're a good club too. If you live in Mesa, you might want to check them out.
Eastside.
Yeah, that's us. Check them out. Yeah, Arizona Predator Callers, and they have a website too.
Jim, how close are you to the town limits?
I'm on the border of Apache Junction and Mesa. That's where I live.
Of random gunfire in Apache Junction.
Pretty
common,
much.
Commonplace.
Well, I'm right around the corner from the lake. Control. What
about? Oh, yeah. You do have a score?
No.
I'm an
online
website.
Yeah.
And what is it again?
It's fishclipper.com. And you know what? I'm thinking of when the lake's open up here, I'm going to try to organize a clean up the lake kind of thing at some of these public
things. Absolutely hell no. Make Tunnel Forest do it.
Okay. That idea has been scrapped.
You just touched a nerve, in case you were wondering.
I just get so sorry to do this. They want their budget passed. They're going to do their job.
I understand.
Absolutely, they are. They have not been. They need to open up the rest of the Ramadas. open up the fish cleaning stations,
I agree.
Open up the ramps they have closed, quit jacking around with the bass permits. You go up there and get a special event permit for, let's say, the Murdoch picnic.
Right.
That's fine. They don't assess you an additional surcharge or fee for so many people.
Right.
On a bass tournament, they do. Yeah. You pay your fee, and then at the end of the year, they check your paperwork, and you get whacked for how many boats you had up there. It's going to stop.
Yeah, I just get frustrated.
It's going to stop.
No matter where you go, it could be anywhere. It could be in Payson, it could be anywhere. I'm just so tired of seeing trash everywhere I go, even the places you got to hike 2-3 miles in to go to.
I get that. You see it. You see a pile of trash in a car next to it, truck next to it. No. Call OGT. Give them their license number.
All right, I'll reevaluate my thought process.
No. There's the box right there. That's the soapbox. It has now been vacated. Don has made his statement for the day.
I apologize.
No, don't.
No, because there's truth in what you say, and it's very true. So.
Yeah, a lot of it. Shame on us.
I
could agree for some of their thought process on wanting to get their budget passed. They think they're doing a good job.
Right.
They're not. And I think they wanted to invoke public outcry, on their behalf to get their budget passed. Fine,
yeah.
We're going to pass your budget, but I guarantee you, you're going to do your damn job. Bottom line,
follow you,
Obama or not. Anyway,
okay. Well,
thanks for getting me fired up. I'm picking up your old trash, Jack.
You're welcome, Don. That's what I'm here for.
If we weren't on a watch before, thanks for coming down.
I'm sorry.
Thanks for inviting me again. It was fun.
You're welcome. Bring your guys back. You're welcome here anytime. Extreme varmint caller. One of the best there is. Eddie Murdoch. Jim Brown. Not the James Brown, but Jim Brown from Fix Up for Robo Worms. And JK. God love you, man. Nice elk.
Thank you.
You're already up on the website. We'll get your European mountain. Here's the deal, guys. Freedom's got a price. Again. October 1st, Red Beanie Day for Bobby Reilly. Seth, get better soon, and our hearts and prayers out to the other six that gave it up this week. I'm Don McDowell.
John Colazar.
Jim Brown.
Ed Murdoch.
Take your kids fishing, hug your bass boat, and salute a soldier. It's got a price tag. We're out of here.